This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Yeah, the ability for deploy capital quickly is something that is rare and is lost amongst many VCs. And the benefit for the founder is, you know, you're not waiting around as the VC just casually takes their time and weeks and months can pass and they say, you know, oh, we're looking for a lead investor, or, you know, we're just getting our stuff together. It sort of tells you if the VC can move that quickly at the very beginning, what it will be like later on as well.
Exactly. You know, I mean, our pre-seed took 22 days, I think, or something like that. It was a priced round as well. So it went from zero to closed with all of the diligence items in a priced round. Granted, it's a company with nothing, so how much diligence can you really do beyond that? But it went from zero to funded in, you know, that 20-something day period, which was, you know, essential for us at that stage.
It's a two-way thing, though. There's a lot founders can do to make it easier for VCs and appreciate what's involved in the fundraising process. You know, you need a deck because things are going to get passed around. If it's not a deck, you need some type of, you know, one page or something so that that information is clear. I've started to see a lot of founders at the early stage also put together data rooms. I think that's a fantastic idea. First, it signals to investors they're not the only one there. Like, why does this person have a data room? And a data room is basically just an organized bunch of folders and files that has key documents in there. Documents that VCs need to go through due diligence. So it could be your financials, it could be your convertible note document, or, you know, the documents that you want VCs to sign. It could be cap tables, it could be decks, sales copies. If you can just put together a data room or a deal room, right, it makes a big difference. And it makes it very easy for everyone on both sides. Not to all say, it inspires a lot of confidence. I mean, our friends in real estate who are listening, real estate is an industry full of information asymmetry and outright fraud sometimes. And it doesn't inspire confidence when you're looking to buy a property from someone and, you know, they can't get the financials together and, you know, documents are all over the place. Big red flags. Whereas everything's packaged up for you neatly and there's marketing materials and there's well-organized, you know, documents, it makes a big difference. And that psychology is exactly the same, you know, anywhere, especially at the pre-seed level. I mean, then you stand out.
You know, and I think psychology is the right term for it as well, because I think, you know, look, the nature of building a startup is that very frequently things are held together by tape, right? And this isn't like, you know, heavy duty Gorilla tape. This is like flimsy off brand Scotch tape, right? So whatever you can do to portray that, you know, picture of you have your shit together, it's going to go a long way, right? Especially as, you know, perhaps you're trying to educate someone in industry as well. I think that's something that we deal with at Andrina with, we're an ISP, right? People want to invest in sexy SaaS startups that are going to the moon, right? At Andrina, we are a software play. We are a hardware play. We are an infrastructure play. We have a lot of different moving parts, and it's a complicated business. So we know up front that we have this kind of, you know, David versus Goliath, or rolling the boulder uphill, right, that we're going to have to get through. So if we can package everything else up nicely, at least, you know, we can portray, we know what we're doing, right? We know what we're doing. We have a semblance of understanding kind of what it's going to take to build this business properly. But again, there's still Scotch tape involved.
Yeah, and any tips on the deck part? Firstly, maybe you disagree, why do founders need a deck? And any tips on, you know, you've looked at lots of decks, I assume. Any tips on what makes a good deck a good deck?
You know, decks are kind of just the language of the business. So I think, you know, it's kind of mandatory, you know, certainly don't want to see a 25-page business plan, right? I think that's the stuff of nightmares right there. But, you know, keep it short and to the point, right? So very concise is important, especially at the early stage, right? There's only so much that you're really doing. And so you need to be able to boil that down. That's ultimately what you're pitching, right? You know, you mentioned earlier, I agree with team up front. That's who you're betting on, right? I think it's very important. Showing your relation to the market or your capacity to execute is going to be essential there as well. You know, the best thing that we've done is working with a designer as well. You know, I am not a designer. I can build a, like, PowerPoint deck, sure, if you want to like go through a board deck, easy, but I am not the one who's going to make something sexy. So I think working with a designer has been great for us and relatively low cost as well. It's nice to have that third party who's not an investor be able to bounce ideas off as well. If you have to go through the process of educating a designer in what you do and help, and he's trying to help you tell, or they are trying to help you tell your story, it's a great kind of dynamic that forms, right? Because you have to understand, you have to boil it down to what's important, right? At the same time, the designer needs to be able to spit it back to you as you want it to appear, right? So, and that iterative process of building with a designer, I think has been very helpful, not just in kind of crafting a nice deck, but then also understanding how we're effectively going to pitch this, right? Especially when it comes towards a complicated business.
James, that's a game-changing way to frame things. Rather than the deck being, oh, here's another thing I need to get done and sent to VCs, it's a chance for you to get better understanding how to describe your business. And by having a designer, it really forces you to simplify something to an outsider. I found that to be the case too. I mean, you know, we raised quite a few rounds. In fact, honestly, when you're a founder, you're always raising money.
Always, yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're always raising money. It means you're always building relationships, and you know, you want the ability to make sure you can just send a couple of text messages and you've got term sheets coming in when you're ready. You know, that takes years and years to do, by the way. But if you're a founder, this is a multi-year process. This isn't a 1 or 2 year thing. This is a 5-10 year journey. And I'd say if you want to build greatness, minimum. So that's a good tip. Another tip that I would have is that if you have traction, and I think you alluded to this earlier, put it at the damn beginning.
Absolutely.
Don't put it at the end. I mean, VCs are flooded with decks. And honestly, you flip through decks very quickly. And the one thing I'm looking for is, okay, team traction, market opportunity. And the traction slide, if you have it, it's bold. I mean, I've given this advice to many founders. Put it near the damn beginning, because then once you have traction, everyone is going to be like, okay, clearly something's working. I don't have to go and annoy you and question your business model, your distribution strategy, and you know, nitpick the little details. If you have traction and you have some product market fit, it doesn't matter what I as a VC think. All that matters is people are paying you, they're using the product. Those are the people that matter. And you know, I've been in meetings, and I made this mistake at the beginning too, when I was raising funding, you know, I'd get a lot of questions like, well, I don't think app developers are gonna put video ads in their app. This was a company I ran before, right? Or, you know, I don't think someone's gonna pay for this. And I'd be like, well, you know, I'll get to that later. Instead, I should have just started with, boom, we're growing like a rocket ship. Things are hot. You know, here are our customers, here's the market size. And that confidence that you have is important. And, you know, another thing about the team slide, a lot of founders don't realize that this is an emotional, I think you said psychological. This is a psychological / emotional game. This is not a rational game. The moment you turn everything into logics and rationality, and then everything becomes looking at financial statements and, you know, questioning things, you've lost. You want to get people excited, and people are humble. They don't, many founders are humble. Some are definitely not humble, right? But many are, and they find it sort of awkward to talk about themselves at the very beginning. But you got to realize VCs want that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you've struck on a few things there, right? So I think, you know, as I was always describing it to founders, a pitch is about building excitement in your business, right? And if you're thinking about crafting a story, craft it with that in mind, right? You always want to be building that excitement level. You never want to go through troughs, because then you've lost that momentum that you previously had, right? You know, again, something that I mentioned previously, traction trumps everything, but I think it's Chris Frelick who told me, like, numbers really know how to up a good story as well. Right. So there's the converse, right? So there's the converse to traction trumps everything. Like, well, what if I don't have traction, right? Pre-traction, early days, then you just have to be able to prepare around that, right? So it's going to pretty story, but you have to also understand that you have to pitch around that. And you still can be successful. Now, it's going to be a harder road, but you have to find the things that are going to be highlights for an investor that they can gravitate to. Again, you know, you have to build that excitement for them with or without that, right? And I think, you know, look, our first round, we had, I think, one beta customer, one person who was using our internet, right? And, you know, that's not traction. Sure, it's like kind of proof of technology, and that's what we built off of, right? It's like, hey, we've been building something, we've brewing something up in Podunk, Princeton, New Jersey. I could say that because I'm from there originally. But, you know, we've been brewing this hardware up. Now we're ready to, like, take it on the road. So I think, you know, that's kind of, you know, a version of how we had zero traction and how you can kind of play towards something else that builds that excitement at the same time.
You know, I think it also requires the entrepreneur to, at the beginning, I think you should just, there's many schools of thoughts, okay? My view is, this certainly was true for me. My first few pitches sucked. So just get out and start pitching to a few people, whether they're investors or not. Just don't pitch to your favorite people. Don't burn through your favorite potential VCs early on. Keep them a little bit further out. And I know VCs like to see the startup and have the first look, but don't do that. Your pitch is not going to be as good as it will be later on. And I must have given, I don't know, my first, you know, seed round, maybe 40 to 50 pitches. And, you know, we had, I don't know, 20 to 30 investors, by the way, right? But at the beginning, you do your pitch and, you know, it's sort of a mess, and then you get feedback and you ask for feedback and then you improve it and you realize, like, wow, the level of sophistication is changing every time. Now investors are asking me more sophisticated questions, and this means that I'm giving them, you know, VCs tend to look at the world the same way sometimes, right? Most of the time we're pattern matchers. There's a couple of big questions we have. If you can address them through your pitch, then the questions they're going to ask will be further on. You know, they're building off of what you've told them rather than, what do you do? Sorry, like, how does this work? Like, how big is the market? Like, if you can answer these questions, then you'll get much more intelligent questions coming back. So I think that's one idea. The other is you can burn out and have hundreds of meetings. And there's some benefit at the beginning to having quite a few meetings just to practice. But ask the potential investor, you know, do you do pre-seed? Right, before I send you the deck, even, do you do pre-seed? Do you invest in this category? Qualify the investors you have so you're not wasting time, because it's very disheartening to spend an hour going through a deck and a pitch and then they say, oh, we actually don't invest in this category. Well, this is too early for us, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's important, right? So, you know, again, a couple things that we've done where I think we've been successful is doing outreach in tranches, right? So there's kind of tranche one are people who, you know, perhaps friendly, we've spoken to previously, but we kind of view them as softer pitches, ones where we just want to warm up to. Tranche two, heavy hitters, let's get some large names in there. We're warmed up on the pitch, we have it honed, let's go for it. And then you can kind of take tranches from there as well as needed. But I think, you know, practicing pitch is always important, right? And you're always pitching your business, right? You know, even right now I'm thinking about, you know, Andrina's high-speed home internet starting at $25 per month, right? And then the 40 other sentences that follow from there. But it's just the nature of the business. And, you know, someone, you know, if you're thinking about starting a business or just entering into the market, realize the next, you know, what hopefully is a 10-year journey is always going to be about pitching, right? And that's just the nature of the beast.
Pitching and hiring, actually. Those are two things I didn't come to expect would be so much of a, you know, a timeshare for me that I'd spend on. You know, also, I think on the VC side, you can learn a lot about a startup just by looking at its deck. Sometimes I can get a sense of your core values. Is design important to you or not? Can you explain your customer value proposition clearly? You know, if your deck sucks, then I'm thinking, oh my God, like, your marketing material probably sucks. And customers are probably getting more confused too. So there is a lot you can learn. And I think it's a matter of respect too. You know, if you're asking to get a partner or a venture capitalist or investor to come on board, you've really got to show you're serious and professional about it. Not everyone can be like Mark Zuckerberg and turn up to a meeting in pajamas.
You know? Exactly. Right? Maybe one day, but today is not that day.
Unless you're selling pajamas or whatever, you know. So moving on to how you decided to start Andrina, what was the process like for you know, the founding team, Neil and yourself, and how did you come to terms with the fact that there are massive competitors, especially in your industry? You've got, I mean, tell us a bit about how big these competitors are and the infrastructure they've got, because that's surely a reason to scare someone away. You know, why don't we start a company competing with big giants who have billions of dollars, literally?
Exactly. I mean, they have, you know, market caps in excess of $100 billion, right? These aren't small companies. But because no, they're a large company.
This isn't even David and Goliath. It's like a monster and a fly.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think we get that advantage, right? The monster doesn't realize the fly's on their shoulder, right? So, you know, I think we've done a few things to kind of really be able to take advantage of this, right? We're a startup. We can move a lot more quickly, right? So we can cover much more ground and we can also test and iterate more quickly. So I think, you know, we have focused on using hardware that allows us to deploy very quickly, but also understand what works best very quickly. Versus the incumbents, they are either stuck with the infrastructure they have, or the investment that they have decided to consciously make is in 5G technology, right? But I think it's also then a function of how we play Sandrina, right? We kind of view the, if the, you know, kind of everyone who uses internet in Andrina is on a plane, right? There are kind of three large buckets that we see in there. There is the rural market on one end. That's, you know, where Elon Musk is going to butter his bread. There are the hyper-dense urban markets. That is the 5G target of the future, right? The Manhattans of the world, the most dense geographies. But then there is this greenfield opportunity in the middle where you can be wildly successful, and that market is still massive, right? So, you know, as a company, we focus on expanding in quote-unquote secondary geographies, right? Not Manhattan, but the outer boroughs, right? So today, you know, we're in Newark, Hoboken, Jersey City, Far Rockaway, Yonkers, Patterson, New Jersey, East Orange, Trenton, Princeton. You know, we love these markets, right? You know, we have a big opportunity because there's generally only one or two incumbent providers. These are smaller markets for the incumbent providers. So perhaps they're not going to, you know, realize what they're losing as much. But we also get an opportunity to really, you know, become a part of these communities, which is important as well, right? You can become a household name in Newark by being the first person that's shown up offering something new and exciting. Right. And the same goes from a sales cycle. When you're the first new company that's new, you know, there are lots of fancy prop tech companies out there. I'll be the first to say Andrina is one of them, right? But, you know, they're going after the super dense markets, right? They're knocking on every door in Manhattan. When you knock on every door in, you know, Patterson, New Jersey, you're generally the first person that's knocked on the door as a new, exciting provider. Right. Especially one as Andrina, our sales model is built on. We don't charge the building anything. Right. We do the installation for free. We actually create a new revenue stream for them as well. Right. So it's like, A, I'm not going to charge you anything. B, you're going to get a check from me every month. And C, I'm going to future proof your building. Right. You're going to have a ubiquitous Wi-Fi system in your building that you can use for your, you know, your management purposes. Right. So I think, you know, that kind of combination of where we're targeting and how we target them plays really well in a market where there are massive players that, you know, want to continue to dominate the Manhattans of the world.